Today, I'm welcoming back Jason Donaldson. Jason is a second practitioner and galactic shaman that mainly practices out of Hawaii, but also travels all around the nation, hosting different types of healing events. So today we're going to talk about demystifying meditation. Meditation is one of the things in my personal life that has made one of the biggest impacts on me and lasting impacts, but is also one of those things that people are kind of confused about, don't think they have the ability to. My mind won't stop racing. I have ADHD. Basically fill in the blank with an excuse. So today we're going to talk about how to approach meditation, to dismiss some of the ideas that you have to do this to meditate, or you've got to do this amount of time, things like that. So it's really how you approach it and how it approaches you with all of these modalities, not just with meditation. We kind of weave in the idea of meditation and prepping our bodies and our peaceful practices as we transition into this new earth prophecy that Jason and another former guest talks about too. So today's conversation is very, very beautiful. There's a lot of layers to it, and I really hope you get something out of it. We'll see you on the other side. All right, welcome back to our show. Today I'm welcoming back Jason Donaldson. Jason was on the podcast about four or five months ago, and we talked about Sekhem, galactic shamanism, and the New Earth Theory. And it just, all those modalities that Jason works with and that he's working towards are just exciting to me, right? You excite me. Like the term galactic shaman was not even a vocabulary word in my being until I was introduced to you from Seth. And so I just adore when people do things that I don't do, because obviously we can't do all the things. So when you find people that do things that I think excite you or maybe intrigue you, it's like, wow, that person is in your path for a reason, right? And you know, we've gone over the mishaps of, or the miscommunications and the missteps that Jason and I have had trying to see each other in Hawaii and all that fun stuff. But it's like, it's those moments where you know that that person's supposed to be in your life in some way, right? And so I actually get to talk to Jason in person today, which I'm super excited about. You're in town for a couple events, and you get to catch it before you go back to Arizona and then Hawaii. So today, Jason is joining me to talk about demystifying meditation. And, you know, Jason and I were talking before I hit record, and many of the listeners might know this because I've talked about this, but, you know, meditation is one of those layers of life-saving modalities that came into my life, and has stuck, thankfully, for about 12 years now. And meditation was a very big process in the beginning. You know, I've talked about this on previous episodes where like I would just sit for years and just sit and not feel anything, just listen to my breath, try not to listen to my thoughts, but not feel, I guess, what somebody said I should be feeling for meditation, right? But I just kept at it because I knew it was something, I felt it. And eventually I started to, you know, find more depth and find more peace. But you know, even now being, you know, having meditated for a number of years and coaching people in meditation, there's still that layer of like, I don't have time. I don't have the patience. I can't do this. I don't know how to sit still. I've got ADHD. I've got XYZ, whatever it is, right? We've gotten a lot of excuses. And one of my favorite things is talking down people from that ledge of, I don't know what to do. I can't do it. I fucking can't find an hour, all this shit. So demystifying this and bringing this in, especially towards the beginning of the year when a lot of people are trying to do more healthy things for themselves and get more, you know, more of a track of you know, some kind of health and wellness. So Jason, first off, thanks for being here. Love having you in my house in person instead of on a Zoom call. You know, just love to get some time while you're in town, man. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, this is great, man. What a cool spot too. You got all kinds of cool toys in here and instruments and things from all over the world, it looks like.
Yeah, really beautiful. Man. Yeah, this is our healing room. I'm actually moving into an office in, I already got the keys. I'm moving in there now. So I'm kind of sad to be leaving this room as the healing space, but also very excited to be moving towards a more private office. like see more clients, less, you know, less, you know, scheduling issues and stuff like that.
But, that's great. Yeah. 2024 energy.
Exactly,
feeling it,
man. Exactly.
It's going to be a big year.
Yeah. So with meditation, I mean, you work with a lot of different modalities. You work with clients, you work with individuals, group sessions, you practice many, many different modalities. Mm-hmm. And, so why meditation and why the mysticism that surrounds it? Like, do you kind of see a common thread of people saying like, this is the reason why I'm scared of meditation, or this is the reason why I'm not kind of drawn to it, or I'm afraid of it, whatever it is?
Yeah. It's a lot of, kind of like hero worship and this of the way it's supposed to be. And I can't stop my mind. And I got all these racing thoughts. I'm like, everybody has racing thoughts. That's always going to be there. No matter how masterful you get at meditation, it's my opinion, my belief that it's always going to be an ego mind that's going to be offering thoughts, ideas, and concepts, because we're on a planet where there's just so much inconsistency and chaos in the minds of others, and there's people murdering each other or hurting each other, people they love. Mm-hmm. And so that's a representation of like basically a lack of meditation, a lack of like, wait a minute, you know, meditation gives that ability, gives us the ability to be like, wait a minute, do I want to act on that thought? Do I want to embrace that thought? Do I want to go into that knee jerk pattern mm-hmm. and continue this cycle? And so I was joking earlier, like meditation kept me out of jail. You know, if it wasn't for meditation, I'd be in jail or dead, because it gives us that fraction of a second to like, you know, put our hands in our pocket rather than take a swing at somebody, or like to keep our mouth shut when, you know, something's going on. And it's just so valuable. And as I was doing tarot card readings and working with people individually, it kept coming up like intuitively, I would tune in what would be beneficial for them. And it kept coming up like meditation, some kind of practice. Even moving meditation like yoga and Tai Chi and Qigong, things like that. But just how it's like a core foundational piece for everybody to basically take command of their own energy, their own vessel, their own temple that is their body. And as we tune in, as we just focus on the breath, as we go in into that meditative state, it's almost like you go home to a house that you haven't been in a while. Mm. And you're like, whoa. What are you doing here? You know, get out, you know, or there's like, you know, the back door is open and right. It's just like, wow, I need to like, you know, use my consciousness and just kind of clear this space a little bit and close a couple doors and maybe, you know, stretch my arm out a little. And, you know, animals do this a lot. They'll right. like when they wake up, they stretch and they yawn and they kind of do some weird movements if you just watch them. And that's because they're tuning into what their body is kind of wanting and, you know, popping things back into place. And
yeah.
You find that with Qigong, just as you're doing those movements, there's stuff popping and snapping and it's like, wow, you know, that motion is really getting everything going. And then with the chi and the conscious breathing, it's really what I feel meditation is bringing us is just 5 minutes a day. Then you take it out into the world
right.
and you do it with just one breath, you know, something happens and you're like, oh yeah, breathe. Okay. And that's the meditation. Mm-hmm. A lot of times just a breath or two when, you know, shit hits the fan and people are freaking out and you're the one that's calm. And that's what like the alpha is in a lot of ways. It's not so much domination and control, but it's the one that can be calm and centered in a stressful situation. Right. And that's what a lot of people want as a leader is like, okay, who can guide me right now? Who's holding it together?
Right.
Basically, you know, it depends on the environment, but a lot of it is just who's not going, losing control and acting like an idiot kind of thing.
Yeah. You know? And that split second you talked about, it might seem like nothing, right? Just split second. Mm-hmm. But that fraction of a second that where you become the witness of the emotion instead of just become the emotion, become entrenched in anger or grief or sadness or whatever that emotion is, it's right there. That split second is a lifetime mm-hmm. when you really can dial into it, because that split second you can have an entire conversation in your head about what you're about to do, why you're about to do it, how it's going to affect people, what the outcome might be. And that can be that initial thing to, like you said, put your hands back in your pockets and shut your mouth, right? Because that might be like, my friend Camo says, what's the most loving thing I can do in this situation right now, right? And sometimes that's not the first thing that pops into my head. It's the, oh, I've just been aggressed upon. Now I defend myself, right? Get ready, because I'm good at being an asshole. I just haven't been one in a while. So here you go. Right. Mm-hmm. But that witness moment, that observer can change your entire life, because that can keep something. I think Ram Dass used to say this, like, try to be so impeccable with your words that you don't have to apologize or repeat yourself. Right. And yes, we're going to fuck up. We're going to say things we don't mean at times. But if you can find those fractions of a second to where you can really make sure that your words are where you want to be, even if they're not received the way you wanted them to be received, they're presented in the way the actions are presented in the way that gives you at least that basis of like, okay, I showed up the way that I feel good. Whether that was received in a good way, that's another story. But I feel good about the way I showed up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's that, you know, that's that mindfulness we talk about, right? Yeah. Whatever kind of modality to create that. But meditation for me has been that thing that just, it really saved my life. Yoga was the first thing that entered my life that was, you know, the most, probably one of the healthiest things I've found. And I found it for vanity. You know, I was overweight, my back hurt, all that shit. But I had this guy Tang that would just, you know, the teacher that would just sit there after class and talk. And he would just talk about meditation and not pushing it, not pressuring anybody, but just talking about like what meditation does and mm-hmm. how you can listen to your breath and, you know, the peace you find. And then eventually I'm like, what's with this meditation shit thing? Like, talk to me about this. And you never know what's going to be that lifeline that you need until you find it and you hold on to it. And you actually see the work that it can do for you.
Yeah. And it's scary because it's becoming more conscious, yeah. You know, and more conscious is becoming more aware of what's going on, and like very often emotional come to the surface. Yeah. And because a lot of us haven't really been modeled or shown or taught like how to navigate emotion, there's a tendency to want to avoid it. And same with the breathing, like a lot of people breathe shallow because once you start taking these deeper breaths, it starts connecting us to the emotion that's always being held at bay with our creational energy actually. So the more we feel the emotion and allow it to be felt and released by focusing on the breath or just being present with the feeling versus the thinking about what we're feeling, it flows. But it's all the thoughts being offered as we're feeling things that makes it linger. And the desire to like figure out where it came from or why is it happening, or I got to re-script this, or I got to like do a scroll retrieval on this. It can get really into like some murky waters, but a lot of times it's like, oh, just breathe, just feel it.
Right.
Breathe bigger than the emotion, release. Like a lot of people hold tight when they're feeling an emotion. And I'll see that in a lot of the breathwork ceremonies and things I do, or just like last night I did a Sekhem group activation, and this one woman was releasing some emotion and I saw she was feeling it, but she would kind of hold. And it's like, okay, breathe, let it go. And then she'd let it go. And I was like, that's it. Feel that. And it's gone just that quick a lot of times. And then the wisdom comes, then the insight comes, not when we're in it, you know, because it's kind of like having blinders on. It's not the time to try to figure out what's happening. It's okay, this is what's going on. Just breathe and be in it, be conscious with it versus trying to manage it with the mind or grabbing a drink or food or even a lot of the like going for a run and the things that we think, oh, this is healthy. A lot of times it's kind of just kicking the can down the road too.
Right.
Yeah, it's great to go run and stuff, but like, let me feel this first. Let me let it go. And then run because I want to, not because I'm trying to manage what I don't want to feel. And that's what I did for a long time too. Yeah. I traded, you know, drugs and alcohol for fitness and meditation. Even the meditation, a lot of times, was like I was going more mental with it versus, you know, being present. Mm-hmm. It was like an escape. I was trying to tune into the divine. Like nothing else exists. Get me out of here, you know?
Right. And that's, oh gosh, man, I'm going to bracket this because I really want to come back to this. But I feel that so deeply. Like when I finally got into yoga and felt the benefits and was seeing what they call the yoga off the mat, right? Like I was a manager in restaurants at times. I, you know, shit goes wrong, people's food and drinks and experience. So, you know, I was used to getting yelled at. I've been a GM for like almost 20 years, right? So I'm used to the one getting the brunt of and also the praise, right? But that yoga off the mat was that first time where somebody was yelling at me because something was wrong with their food, but I wasn't feeling my heart palpitate. I didn't feel my emotions rush. I can stay with my Ujjayi breath that I created. But the other side of that too, is that like, I got so entrenched in yoga, it became my new drug. I was going 2 to 3 times a day. You know, I was just living in the studio. I would teach, you know, 10 classes a week and take 12, right? I in my head, I was great. You know, you're dedicating yourself to your practice. I would meditate also. And then it wasn't really until COVID. So I had that pace for almost probably 7 years. And it wasn't until COVID happened when the studio shut down, when I finally couldn't go to the studio. I was still teaching because we had online yoga, but I couldn't go practice in the heat. And I realized after about 3 days how damaged my body was, because I finally let everything settle enough to feel the tears, the pulls, the aches, the pains, right? And I'm like, oh my God, like I'm not doing health for my body, right? I'm destroying my body through what I perceive as being healthy, but I'm just replacing another addiction. And so where I want to come back to with that is the dangers of awakening, because there's sometimes where you all of a sudden find yourself in an awakened moment and you're not really ready for it. And all the senses are on, all the empathy is on, all the emotions are on, and you have no idea what to do with that. And that's something that, that I coach clients through a lot. And I do want to get back to that. But before we get there, I want to just like kind of talk about how you approach the person that is anxious about meditation, confused about it, right? I don't know what to do. I don't know where to start. I don't know, you know, how am I going to be, do I have 40 days to sit under a fucking Bodhi tree like Buddha did? You know, am I going to, you know, all these things that people might have in their heads, right?
Yeah.
So where do you kind of meet people at and just, you know, that initial, I'm going to pull you down off this ledge, nice and gentle, and then we're going to have a conversation or whatever that might be.
Yeah. It's like from doing a lot of group work, it's, you just normalize it, okay. You know, you make it that there's nothing wrong with them or that they're special. You know, there's this tendency in the world to think we're special, like really good, like special in a good way or special in a bad way, right. You know, but it's really just, and this is one of the toughest pills I had to swallow, as one of my teachers was like, just be ordinary. I'm like, be ordinary. Why would I want to be ordinary?
Yeah.
And that becomes extraordinary though, because we're not trying to be something or do something a certain way. We're just surrendering to what is. And that's what meditation is a lot of times. It's just a surrender. It's just the noticing and not taking on all those thoughts that are being offered that, oh, I can't meditate. That's for people that are enlightened. That's for, you know, like, who am I to be doing this? It's funny because the ego mind is always trying to, like, keep us in this illusionary world. Mm-hmm. And that's its job, you know, to keep us anchored in a seemingly physical reality and keep us safe and try to figure things out. But when it comes to like actual life and relationships, it's horrible at trying to navigate that. And so really the answer is presence. Yeah. And so whenever we come into presence, we'll always know what to do, especially when we're allowing ourselves to feel, we're connecting with our hearts. And for me, it's the breath, like just to breathe. It's the most important thing you need to do. Like we can live without food for a certain period of time, water, but if you're not breathing, you're not alive. And so that very breath is the life force energy, and it's your spirit. It's animating the body. It's pumping the blood. It's moving the lymphatic system. It's oxygenating the blood. I mean, it's doing so much. Mm-hmm. And the heart-lung connection is crucial. It's all laid out there for us. I feel like that's how every master and adept and people that can do amazing things have accomplished it, is by focusing on the breath.
Right.
And like Wim Hof did so much to like really... gosh. Expose that to the world, and you know everyone's into it now. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, like people I wouldn't expect, are all into breath work.
Yeah, and it's, you know, what I love about breath work meditation is that it reinforces the fact that you're your own healer. You're born with everything that you need.
Yeah,
you're born with all the abilities, all the tools, all the things that you need. We just need to learn how to use them properly. And we've forgotten that. And, you know, so that's beautiful that there are people like yourself and other practitioners out there that are teaching people how to do this. And now, you know, we're hearing it at such a young age. A lot of schools are embracing meditation, breath work, things like that, whether it's public schools or the Waldorfs or the more private schools. But I think we're finally starting to get to humans at a younger age to teach them this. Like, you don't have to look outside of yourself, right? Now, if my guts are hanging out and I got in a car accident, I got broken bones and shit, please take me to a surgeon, right? But a lot of the ailments that we have right now are caused by us, by our own thinking, by our own thoughts, by our own actions. And so if we can find those ways that we can look at ourselves and quiet ourselves and be observant of those actions, we might be able to sidestep a lot of this toxicity that we have going on inside of us.
Yeah. It's, you know, people just get lost.
Yeah.
They need a guide, but the answers are inside of them. So we guide them to the answers inside that are best for them. And a lot of times it's the same answers everyone else gets, but it's spoken differently or it's expressed differently. And that's the fun, is like, we're coming out of a time period where, you know, whether intentionally or otherwise, we were lied to and misled, and it created this kind of disconnection and this right. inability to really just be present and be with what's happening. And even in the schools and everything else, it was always this next thing. You have to have a plan. You have to have a goal. You know, what are you going to do? And it creates a tremendous amount of like projection into the future and this kind of angst that is really challenging for people to turn off, you know, or just to not feed into. And that's really what it is. It's like, what are we choosing to feed as God creator beings? What we focus on becomes more real, at least to us. Right. Nobody else may notice, but to us in our world, in our head, it's like, this is what's happening right
now.
There
is, yeah.
And everyone else, I've done that in a lot of groups. Groups are great because you can point out like we call it a reality check, where somebody would say something and they're like, I didn't say that. I don't do that. Mm. And then like five people in the room would be like, yeah, you did say this. And then everyone else confirms it. And they're like, damn, okay, I got to own that.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Well, there's also, I mean, there's that victim mentality that we can fall into. Right. So like, oh, I can't even do that. Right. Right. You know, I've done that wrong. So I can't even come back from that, you know, and that's, it's such a dangerous place to be in because yes, there's trauma involved around that. Right. And one of the most recent things for me with victim mentality that I actually talked about on the podcast not too long ago was, waking up to my participation in the wronging of the world. Right. So I'm a 43-year-old man, grew up in the South. Right. So I participated in racism. I participated in sexism. I participated in separatism. Now I've not gone out there and held flags and gone to rallies and all this stuff, but just in the background that I grew up in, I was exposed to and felt victim to many stereotypes, right? Mm-hmm. And so that we start to realize that, we unpack that, we start to unravel that as we get older or when we find it. But so many times, like if we find the fact that like, I did participate in sexism, shit. Now I just hide in that victim mentality. Now I'm just a victim, right? Oh my gosh, I've done this wrong. Oh my God, please, woe is me. Somebody come comfort me. I've done something wrong. Instead of I see my misstep, right? And now what do I need to do to right this wrong within myself, within my community, whatever it is? And, you know, stepping into that type of mentality from that victim mentality is really difficult, but it's a huge shift. And for me, meditation was that key to be able to look again at that ego that can take on any character that it needs to, right? It can be that power domineering, you need to do this, but it can also soften itself and be like, oh, Adam, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, you're the victim. Just sit on the couch and watch Netflix and be okay, right? Just sit in your sorrow and it's going to be all right. We'll figure it out. Instead of getting out of that and doing something about it, right? Let me sit with my thoughts. Let me sit with my breath. Let me sit with myself and figure out how I can show up better.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where the answer is love comes in, you know, and that's, again, meditation is surrendering to the love, the peace, the joy that we all are, that we all have within us, because that is the creational energy. And so no matter how far we stray, we'll always come back to that. No matter how murderous or racist or abusive a person is, whether intentionally or otherwise, just from, you know, what they were around and exposed to and were modeled from their environment, there's always the opportunity to like be, wait a minute, in this now moment, I choose something different. And we've seen that in the world many, many times. Like I always remember the bullfighter, and I didn't see it, but I saw, you know, the story, and maybe it was, hopefully it was real. But the point is, you know, he couldn't kill this bull. Like he was trying to kill it. It wasn't even really charging him. And he was like forcing himself to kill this bull. And he was like, you know, he just kind of sat down, broke down, and started crying. Cause he realized like, what am I doing? What am I participating in? Right. And this happened in one of my lifetimes where I was shown, I had many, many lifetimes where I was in wars and battles, and I like that. I like the military and I like all that stuff, but I have a really sensitive nervous system. So I don't do that this lifetime, but, they showed me one lifetime where I saw the game. I saw how I was being manipulated by the people that set us to war with one another, and they weren't even there.
Yeah.
And I realized I was killing my own brothers and sisters. I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing out here? And then it just broke my heart in half. And I left a part of my heart in that lifetime in France. And I actually reclaimed it in this lifetime, not even knowing that I was doing that. But as we were landing in Marseille, like 4 or 5 years ago, I felt this huge heart reclamation, just this mass, like loving presence. And I'd been swimming with dolphins previous to that because the woman I was dating was like part mermaid. And that kind of like helped expand and open that place that I had hardened in this life, especially younger in this lifetime. And it's just, and I've been shown this in visions too, that it's really easy to do the work I do because I'm just pointing out what people already know. And it's just a surrendering to that and reminding them, and you see it, it just clicks and a light goes off. You're like, oh, I know this already. Like, what do I need you for?
Yeah.
And then they kind of forget and they shift, they go back into the other programmings. But at any moment it's like, breathe. What do you feel? Or not even what do you feel? Just notice what you're feeling, breathe into that space. Now let it go and just allow it. And then it shifts. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Even with trauma and everything else, because a lot of it is the mind is trying to make sense of it and trying to change it and trying to manage it. But it's like, no, let go of it and just allow the water to flow. If emotions are like water, just allow that versus trying to kink the hose with all the thoughts being offered. Because thoughts will always be offered.
Right.
In this moment, tons of thoughts in my head right now.
Yep.
And I'm like, no, I'm just going to breathe and talk.
Yep, totally.
be here now versus what's going to happen a second from now or 10 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's one of those common misconceptions about meditation is like you shut your brain off. Mm-hmm. No more thoughts come in. Like, no, there's always thoughts, right? There's always going to be thoughts. It's whether or not you pay attention to the thoughts.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, the way we did some meditation classes for kids recently, a couple years ago,
nice. Actually.
And one of the ways that we found to approach that kind of idea with them is to say like, okay, so think about your mind as a lake, right? And so you're in that lake, there's all different types of fish, right? There's an angry fish, there's a happy fish, there's a sad fish, there's, you know, grief fish, there's all these different fish floating around. You're not the fish, you're the lake, right? So you might see the grief fish float by and be like, oh, well, that's kind of sad. But you don't become that fish, you just witness the fish floating by.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, there's grief. Okay, got it. There's a message there, right? Cool. Oh, there's happiness. All right, got it, right? We're not fully stepping into each emotion. We're just observing them as they move by, so we don't become that. We observe it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, and that can be kind of counterintuitive for like joy and happiness, but it's that same thing. It's that kind of idea of that middle path that the Taoists talk about, right? If we're on this middle path and we see joy, we can step towards joy, yes, right? But if joy moves away, have we attached ourselves to joy so now that there's sadness when the joy moves away? Or we just experience joy, and then when joy is over, we're back to this middle path, and then it's like, oh, okay, well, there's some fear over there, so let's go see what fear has to say. Come back to the middle path. If it's had like kind of that ping-ponging back and forth where you're not really tied to one outcome or the other, but you just kind of observe, right? You just, oh, I'm over here, now I'm seeing what's happening, and now I come back over here into this middle path.
Well, even if you surrender to any of it, like I really truly believe and have seen that we are always in joy, peace, and love, always. It's just our ego mind that is creating these other illusionary, like other emotions and states of being and this experience we're experiencing as life. But it's not as powerful as, you know, they talk about, the Buddhists, I believe, talk about it, like the divine mind and the little mind, or big mind, little mind.
Mm-hmm.
So basically we are of that Godhead. We are of the divine mind, and, you know, God is love, peace, and joy, you know, universe, whatever you want to call it. And through our free will, we're able to experience other states of being, other emotions and other experiences. But if we actually fall into it and we let go of the ego mind that's reinforcing it, we'll always hit love, peace, and joy.
Mm.
And that's basically, but it's a constant surrender. You know, it's like, I think that's what Jesus meant by turn the other cheek. It wasn't so much when maybe, I don't know, I'm not that level, if someone's hitting me and stuff, I'm not going to defend myself. But it was more like not succumbing to like the assaults of our own mind, like not getting engaged with that, like don't engage, engage with the heart, engage with the breath, but feel, we got to feel.
Yeah.
And that's what releases. And I think that's what scares people, is because maybe they forgot that they are love, peace, and joy. And so to feel and surrender to any emotion, there's this fear that you're going to get stuck in it. That was my thing with depression. I had depression and anxiety for years and years and years and took meds and finally got off them. But I was always afraid I was going to get stuck in it. And I would, because I'd be using my mind.
Mm.
Like, what's wrong with me? Oh, I am a piece of shit. Oh, I'm not good enough. These are all the reasons why. And that's what the mind does, is it's like, okay, bing, this goat. He wants to know all the reasons why, you know, he's an idiot and why he feels this way. when really it's because there was one thought from childhood or whatever that came in so fast I didn't even notice, and it created that feeling. Mm. And that's really my belief too, is that thoughts create our emotions,
right,
other than love, peace, and joy, which is great. But at any moment, as we get more and more adept at being present and noticing, you know, if we can't notice a thought come in, it's the feeling's there. And it's, if we allow the feeling to be there and get used to navigating that, eventually we'll have an insight or like a vision of like what even is creating this. Mm. And it's like, and that, but that doesn't change it either, because it'll still happen. It's not like, I know now it's over, right? Because that's what a lot of us go through, is like, I just need to figure out what's wrong and then I can fix it. And it's, yep, like, no, now you know it's wrong and still can't fix it, because, yep, it still comes around. And that's the other part with meditation is, and I think a lot of people do a disservice by pretending they're so enlightened and so, you know, I'm enlightened now, but they still have a racing mind. They still have stuff going on. I don't, right, know for sure, but I've watched people that project that persona that I am, you know, so great and amazing. And it's not very many people, luckily, but I see them kind of spin out, you, mm-hmm, know, and it's like,
yeah.
And not to judge him, but it's like, you know, you'd benefit your followers if you said like, yeah, I had this thing happen the other day and I got caught up in it.
Right.
Even me, you know?
Yes. So you got to humanize, yeah, everybody, you know, and there's actually a Ram Dass speech from like the 70s, early 70s, floating around YouTube and podcasts and stuff. But he was talking about like how when he went from Richard Alpert to Ram Dass, right? Mm-hmm. And he, holy man, doing speeches after he quit the LSD and all that stuff, you know, and he was, you know, going around doing all these talks, and he felt like he had to be Ram Dass all the time. Like he had to be that pious, happy, joyous, you know, always loves light. Exactly. And what he found himself doing was, you know, he would do these beautiful speeches for thousands of people and everybody's happy, get off stage and get angry with his assistant. Like, my water's too cold and I need my towel. Like all this, you know, stardom kind of shit. But because he didn't embrace his humanity, he thought that he couldn't be or angry or fearful or sad because he was Ram Dass now. He had to be pious and joyful and all this shit. So he bastardized all of those emotions, which just made them come stronger, mm-hmm, and made them act out and made them irrational. And so his message was basically, it's like, you've got to be, you're here as a human, having a human experience, learn the curriculum, right? Be a part of it, right? And that, for me, where that really landed to me, besides just humanizing ourselves, was I'd always romanticized about, you know, going to live in the Himalayas. I'm going to go live in a cave. I'm going to go live with some monks. I'm going to go just remove myself from humanity and just go be a spiritual being, right? Nobody's going to trigger me. I'll be just fine by myself, right? Nobody talks, all that shit. Well, that's all good, right? But we need to be triggered, right? Maybe not the mass we, right? My journey in this life, right? This existence that I know for myself is to work on the self, right? Not to go, not say hide in a cave, but not go to remove myself from humanity. And so to do that, like, I'm going to do the work that I need to do that I feel is good to me, but I'm also going to reimmerse myself in humanity to see how that work does. Am I still getting triggered by the person that just honked at me and cut me off, right? Do I still have, like, that middle finger is ready to go and I'm ready to scream out the window, right? Am I able to find my breath through that? And am I able not to judge myself no matter which way I end up going? You know, and I think that's so important to get to those points to where we can be the witness and not the judge, right? Uh-huh. We're so judgmental of ourselves, of others, of things that are happening in life because there's that perception of control. Like, we have control. If I control this, everything will be okay. And the meditation and the movement practices for me have taught me that, like, release it, release the control. That's where your anger, that's where your sadness, that's where your frustration comes from, is you trying to manhandle life.
Yeah. Well, you dance with it instead. Yeah. Cause a good dancer kind of feels and senses the partner, even though, you know, we may be the lead, we're still needing to follow and guide rather than just pushing people around. It makes a difference. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I love what you said too, that how you were just dedicated to the having the experience of meditation, even though you didn't really notice anything at first, you kept at it.
Yeah.
Because you wanted to believe, you wanted to have that experience, and the universe responds to that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? There was like the smallest whisper of an intuitive voice in the back of my head, just like, just keep going. Like,
yeah.
You'll be okay. And it was so, just quick story with this, like, it was so frustrating in the beginning because, like, I didn't know what I was doing besides the guy Tang I talked about earlier. Like, he gave me some like pointers and stuff, but it was non-formal, you know, just conversational shit. And so one day I got home after yoga and I'm like, I'm going to meditate. I'm gonna sit here in front of my fireplace, my back against the couch, and meditate. So I get, how do people meditate? Oh, they cross their legs, right? So like, cool. Put my leg up here, put my other leg up there, and I ripped my knee.
Oh,
I was like, oh, wow.
Wow.
There's that victim mentality. I can't even meditate right. I hurt, I ripped my LCL, the outside of my right knee, trying to sit cross-legged, which I wasn't ready to do yet because I thought that's how you had to sit, was cross-legged, wow. Right?
Yeah. And you're like, I'm going to do this too. I'm going to make this happen.
Doing it. Here's my timer. I'm in the dark. I'm listening to my breath. Rip. I'm like, fuck, man. It's like 6 months. I couldn't even kneel right because I screwed up my knee.
Oh, man.
So it's, you know, it's like the things we try to do and we, you know, but it was that, as painful as that was and as disheartening as it was that thing that showed me like, get out of your own fucking way. It doesn't matter. You don't have to sit in a way. You can lay down. You can stand up. You can sit in a chair. It doesn't matter how you sit. It's your intention behind it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, a lot of that demystifying thing is like, it doesn't matter how you approach it. It matters that you're approaching it. Where you approach it now compared to where you approach it tomorrow and 10 years from now is going to be very different, right? But just put the toe in. Find your approach to it, right? Find your way, find your entrance way into the modality and then let it show you what it needs you to do. Right? But if we get in there with like, I'm going to do this and this is what I'm going to do and this is how it's going to be and this is the effectiveness that's going to happen, the expectations are resentments waiting to happen, right? So we're just kind of setting ourselves up for that fall, but, you know, opening yourself up just to have the experience, just to step in and just see what's going on.
Yeah, it's very brave to do it too. Yeah. It's on some level, it's kind of terrifying. I remember that like early on and, yeah, and I saw blue light the very first time.
Wow.
And if I hadn't seen that, I probably wouldn't have kept doing it.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, this is like, it was pitch black room, middle of the night. And I decide I'm going to sit up and meditate, you know, and somebody had given me this tape to listen to. I think, actually, I'd listened to that previously or something. But I remember I saw that blue light pretty quickly. And I opened my eyes and it's like dark in there. I was like, wow, what is that?
Mm.
Where did that come from? You know, and that set me on the path. Like, this is real. Because I always believed there was magic and mystery in the world. And a lot of things I knew and understood that other people just looked at me weird. And, but I just knew, you know, and that was like a reinforcement for me. Like, oh, okay, there is something there.
Yeah.
So that, yeah.
Ah, what a fucking cool experience, man. That's so cool. Like, I literally listened to my body ache for the first 3 years. I'm like, no, we're going to do this. One day this is going to work. But it was, and that's the thing. Like, you look back and you're, as frustrating as it was all working. Like, it was all working at this, as it needed to. You know, that's one of my favorite things about styles like Vipassana, where it's like a silent meditation. Because, you know, from your story you just shared, one of the layers of silent meditation that the effectiveness of it is that if you're not sharing your experience, you don't have those stories in your head about what you're doing right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Right. So if we're sitting next to each other in a 10-hour meditation and then all of a sudden we finish and you're like, I saw a fucking blue light. And I'm like, I listened to my fucking hips yell at me for the last 10 hours. Like, clearly I'm doing something wrong. Nobody's doing anything wrong. Nobody's doing anything right. Right. You're all doing it at the pace you need to. So having those experiences and being able to understand what your own experience is and how you approach it, I think is really interesting with that silent meditation side of it, you know, so you can really kind of dial into how it's resonating with you as the human that you're representing as, not as like what you expect because you've read this in a book or heard somebody else talk about it.
Yeah. What works for you? Yeah. Like, yeah, I sat in chairs. Like, I didn't want to sit on the floor. I'm moving to that more now because I realize how much better it is for my body.
Right. Yeah.
And at one point I was meditating a lot all the time and a lot of it was kind of an escape too, I realized, but, my back started hurting me and bugging me and it was kind of a way for my guides to get me to do more out in the world. Like I was really good at like, you know, it's still a struggle a lot of times to meditate just in a struggle. I mean, with the mind racing and then eventually it would kind of settle like a snow globe. And I would have all these weird experiences, and that's why I was doing energy work and stuff now, is I started kind of doing it in meditation and noticing things like weapons in my body and stuff like that and pulling it out. And, but it was like, as soon as I got up and moved around, it was like, bing, my mind started racing and I was like anxious and nervous and stuff again. But, then I started doing Tai Chi and Qigong and that helped me like be intentional and really present with my movements and be in the world. And it was really like them getting me to be like, okay, you need to get out in the world and do stuff rather than just sit and meditate for, you know, an hour or two and, you know, feel good and then have something trigger you and you just go have to sit and meditate for another 20 minutes. Cause I had that mentality. It's gotta be a certain period of time. It's gotta be at least 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Cause that's when I drop in and I'm in a good place. And now it's like, you know, with practice, and I've seen this with people really quickly, is it just taking a couple of breaths and like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
Cause they're not letting it all build up. You know, they're not believing the thoughts that there's something wrong with them or they can't do it or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's so special when your practices can get to that point, you know, where it doesn't take whatever allotted amount of time or effort that you're used to giving it or that you think it needs to give, that you can literally do it right here, right now, standing in line at Target, driving your car down the freeway, you know, whatever it is, something triggers you and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm good. Okay, cool. All right. Got my practices, got my breath, got my understanding, got constitution. We're good to go.
Right? It's like, oh, I love myself. It's okay.
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, I kind of overreacted, but I love myself. It's okay. Like the internal dialogue changes a lot too. That's what's great. Cause I still do stupid things.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, I like to drink here and there too. And I participate in things. People would be like, what are you doing? I thought you were all like spiritual and stuff and not hurting people, but like, you know, like eating meat and going to a football game and stuff. Like I was in Phoenix and I was hanging out with my friends there and they're not too much into the spirituality stuff. My friend's wife is, but we were doing a lot of like stuff that people would be like, what are you doing? I thought you were like a galactic shaman guy. And I'm like, you know, I'm living my human life.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you human find, experience. I find balance though. I got to like not go over the edge and,
yeah,
you know, drink a whole lot. It's like, I have limits cause I used to have a problem. So now I never drink more than four. And it's usually just one or two and then I'm good. Cause like maybe my liver's bad or something, but like, I'm like, whoa, that's plenty. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Well, and there is a personal balance that we can each find with something if we want to, right? Like I know a lot of, you know, medicine folk or shamans that use alcohol and ritual because it helps them deepen whatever practice they're trying to get towards. Right. There's Eastern religions, philosophies, especially in the old Kung Fu movies, you have the masters, right, that would walk around. And one of them, actually played by Jackie Chan for a while, was the Drunken Master.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Right? Yeah, right? That movie. And it's like the Drunken Master has to have alcohol in his system. That's his life force, right? So the Drunken Master is an immortal being, been around for, you know, centuries. But the way he stays that way, Jackie Chan in this character, was by drinking alcohol. Right. And so the fighting style, the way they approach life, all this stuff was through this like drunken haze. But also there's a lot of wisdom that was going on, a lot of like prophecy that was being spoken about, a lot of like just beautiful like ways to approach life, because this person found the balance that they needed, which is outside of my personal balance, but it's perfect within their balance.
Yeah.
So it's finding that way of, you know, with plant medicines, alcohol, drugs, whatever it is, right? We have this way that we can approach life. There's a lot of different things we can do with the life we have. If you entrench yourself in, like you said, meditation, I'm going to meditate all the time. That can be as toxic as heroin, right? You know, if that's because you're removing yourself from life, you're basically living in a haze that you're not allowing yourself to participate with. Right. And so it's like, you know, everything we got to find a moderation with, and we got to find modicums of, but finding what works for you and not judging yourself for it, because like you're having fun, you're experiencing life, you're still within your boundaries of whatever that means for you. Fucking hell, man. Get out there and have fun.
Yeah.
Go to a football game, eat some steaks, right? Have a beer. Who fucking cares, right? Just be responsible with yourself.
Well, it's like the Ram Dass thing too. I see this with a lot of like vegetarians and vegans, like their body actually wants something they're denying it, you know, and it'd be fine maybe if they ate some meat once in a while, but not like every day. And you know, it's balance. And like, also that balance requires, as it gets to be like a razor's edge sometimes, the closer we come into the balance, into the middle path, like you were speaking of, the more easier it is to just fall over and fall back into the old pattern, you know, at least briefly, but we always come back.
Yeah.
And that's what I teach people with meditation is like, your mind's going to wander. You're going to get caught up in it. No big deal. Just come back. Just come back. No problem. But what happens is people, you know, beat themselves up. You know, they make it wrong or bad or this only happens to me. I'm special.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone else can meditate, but I can't because I'm broken.
I'm the exception. Yeah, totally.
Which I understand.
Right. Yeah. I thought that for a long time.
I still think that sometimes. I'm like, wait a minute. No, that's not me. You know, that's like my ego mind offering that from old conditioning and everything else.
Yeah. Well, with meditation, like what is, like, so if somebody's coming to you and never meditated very early on in the practice, is there a practice of meditation that you recommend to start with? Or is it kind of seeing where the person's at and then, you know, using that vast knowledge that you have to say, okay, so breath work is where I think you should start with that, or light meditation, or, you know, things like that.
Yeah. You know, the breath work it's just a thing because most of us aren't breathing. So we have this modality called breath work. But often what I teach people is just how to breathe, how to just take deep, conscious breaths. But with a exhale out through the mouth to help with the release. But really it's just getting people to breathe more deeply and to focus on the breath. And that way they come into presence, because it's not even about the breath either. It's about presence. Mm. And that's what, you know, a lot of meditation is focusing on one thing, like a mantra or whatever. But the mantra tends to sometimes get us into our intellect. So right. I didn't like that as much, and it became kind of like zombie type thing.
Okay.
But usually that was just a temporary, you know, you just do it a couple times and then you release even the mantra and the breath and, you know, drop in. But because the mind can get so busy, there's this tendency, I need to come back to something. Mm. And so the breath I like, because we're doing it anyway. And we're tuning into what was unconscious, and then we become conscious of it. We become more the dancer with the present moment.
Right.
And so that's what I have people do, is just set a timer and connect with the breath. I have a whole course I set up where it just gets people gradually moving into that. Like, you just set up your space and have fun with it first, and just sharing some information about what I've found is helpful, mm-hmm. that I wish people would have told me when I started meditating, or about life in general. But, it's just coming back to the breath over and over, coming back to the present moment, and even feeling the body, feeling the feet. Mm. But, it's just doing it.
Yeah.
Man.
There's a I can't remember who it was now. I was listening to somebody talking the other day, and they were talking about presence. You mentioned presence just now. Presence, consciousness, you know, all those, you know, there's states of being, but they're also buzzwords, right? A lot of people don't understand what that means. Like, what does presence mean? What does consciousness mean? What does enlightenment mean, right? And this one person, you know, put it in a very, just a very interesting way I'd never heard before. And they were saying, you know, like, so as a human, we're made up of, you know, trillions of different cells that are coming from all over the galaxy, right? We're stardust, we're hummingbird feathers, we're orange peels, we're fucking whatever, right? All these things construct this atom, not atom, Adam, as a human being that you see in front of you, right? Same with Jason in front of me.
Yeah.
But all those cells, like, if we're not conscious, if we're not present, there's a modicum of that cell that's still a river, that's still a bear, that's still an orange peel, that's still a piece of star, right? And so if we're not really fully present as me, the human being Adam, then my body is all over the place, still remembering all the things it used to be. It's like swimming in a river. It's, you know, trees, it's birds, all the shit. So that presence is just reminding all the cells that, hey, guess what? We're Adam, right? We're manifesting as Adam right now, right? So yes, I feel the energy of the hummingbird. I feel the energy of the orange peel, right? But we're manifesting as Adam. So get those, all those trillion cells right now are representing as Adam. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was, it, for some reason, that clicked, right? Because when I sit in meditation, that's, you know, I didn't know it until this person kind of put it that way, but that's kind of what I'm doing, right? I'm bringing myself back to my breath. I'm bringing myself back to a place where I'm not the stories, I'm not the thoughts. I'm aware of them, but I'm not engulfed in them.
Yeah.
And through that, all these, maybe not trillion cells, maybe I got maybe a half billion that are in there that are finally like, hey, guess what? We all know that we're Adam. Right. The other ones are still kind of figuring it out, but these ones know in a very strong way that we're Adam. We're representing as Adam. This is your constitution. This is what you do. This is how you present in life. It's like, oh God, that's reassuring. Like, I've never felt like myself before, mm-hmm. you know, and that was one of those things that meditation, and it's not like it made me feel like myself. It helped me accept the self, the capital S self.
To find yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Beyond all the noise and distraction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's beautiful, man, because that's so true. Like, there is no time either. So right. Every lifetime we've had on this planet and all the others is happening right now. Mm. And so sometimes we feel that. We feel the energy of that lifetime.
Yeah.
And if we try to figure it out right here now, it's going to be like, no way.
Yeah.
No way you're going to know, you know, that. And that's what's so great is, like, you know, it sounds like you found that too, where we all, as we meditate, you start to find and discover things inside. You're like, oh, whoa, there's like this glowing energy by my heart, or there's this, I feel really comfortable in this. It's hard to describe, but these gifts start being offered, and it's undeniable because you feel it, you see it, and it's with you forever after that. And occasionally you may forget and be like, oh, there's that feeling, there's that thing. And like people that do ayahuasca and a psychedelic, especially at higher doses, like if you haven't really cultivated like your center or that ability to be kind of in your body, it can fragment. I've seen people start screaming and going nuts because like they're just all over the place, and you got to find, you know, your center. Mm-hmm. At least that's my opinion, to be embodied, to be grounded. Cause so much of what I had to learn in my process is because I'm way out there with like channeling and all this stuff that comes to me, as I had to be grounded and I had to be present. And so, you know, anybody that's listening, we go through these challenging things in life. A lot of times that's to help us stay grounded here on this planet and to be here, because we actually have this tendency to, be out in the cosmos.
Right.
And we're bringing that here to this planet because it's what's needed and it's what's changing everything here and now.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great time because the energy is moving towards that. Mm-hmm. Like there is more people embodying and waking up and choosing love and choosing their passions versus their need to's kind of thing.
Definitely. There's something you mentioned about time earlier, how, you know, time's not linear. Right. Mm-hmm. And I listened to somebody talking about this the other day, and they were talking about how, you know, in the West, we think about time as moving, like you said, linearly, but from left to right. Right. Because we read from left to right.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But different cultures, like in Hebrew, they read right to left. Mandarin, they read top to bottom. Right. So it's like it's really cultural which way time moves, but it's always this linear kind of movement. And Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking the other day about, like, say there's an advanced civilization 65 million years, light years away, right? And so if they have this high-powered telescope and they zero in on Earth, our Earth, however many, you know, 65 million light years away, if they look at us right now, they'll see dinosaurs. They'll see the dinosaur era, right? Because that's where we're at. You know, they're 65 million years away, light years away. If they look at that telescope, they're going to see us 65 million years ago. Just like if we, same thing, if say 13 million light years away, we're going to see another galaxy or another civilization 13 million years in the past, right? Because that's just the way time in space works, right? And that, it's kind of baffling, but at the same time, like if you look at a lot of the indigenous cultures and the way they look at life and time, it's not a circle, but it's like within this sphere. And you can almost like pull any time frame you want from it.
Oh, like a spiral.
Yeah. You know, it's not moving left to right, top to bottom, right to left, whatever it is. It's just all right there. It's like a soup that you get to kind of pull from and say like, oh, there's this time frame. Oh, there's this time frame.
Yeah.
And that approach to me, even though it doesn't really make sense, it does kind of, it feels like it makes more sense to me. And I don't know I don't know how to explain that. You know, there's some of those gnosis ideas, you know, that you can't really explain, you know, you feel. And that explanation just feels more realistic to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Because, yeah, I don't think we can ever really comprehend this, you know, what we're experiencing here.
Right.
But there are like helpful analogies and things and, yeah, I think a lot of the quantum physics is helping with that too, with like frequency and vibration, mm-hmm. and it's like changing the station on a radio.
Right.
You're changing that frequency, and it's not necessarily get to a higher frequency. I get more enlightened and I'm more joyous in the world. It's like, oh, now I'm at a different level and I'm seeing more things.
Right.
And I have to like process what I'm seeing now. I'm realizing, oh, I participated in certain things that were harmful to others. And it's like being okay with that and choosing not to do it anymore first. And then maybe someone we cross paths with that we can make it right, mm-hmm. you know, by helping them or whatever it is. But a lot of times I think it's just feeling it and acknowledging what's there. And then that's the work, and that helps save us all.
Right.
Rather than beating ourselves up about it.
Yeah.
Or getting angry and pretending we didn't do it.
Yeah.
You know? Either way, it's like, are we willing to face these things? And the time on the planet now is that, you know, can we face these things that are coming up and not tell somebody how we should feel and think about it?
Yeah.
Like how, yeah, what happens after I feel it? What happens after I sit with it and allow it to be? And then what am I guided to do kind of thing?
Yeah. So. Well, I think a good opportunity to get back to that bracket I put in a while back, but the dangers of awakening, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, there's so many theories out there about, you know, like the Mayan calendar rollover 2012, you know, all this stuff, you know, the Mandela effect. Are we crossing universes now? The idea that string theory is one of the most plausible and confirmable theories in quantum physics, that we have multiple timelines, like just a billionth of a nanosecond away from each other, you know, like all these different universes, right? This, you know, multiverse, if you will. And so, like, there's so many different ways that the human being can manifest in life, right? Whether it's, you know, personality, all this stuff. But that danger of awakening, sometimes, like, we don't realize what we're not seeing until we see it. And there's a theory on, like, the Mayan calendar 2012. Now, I'm not saying I believe in this. I just love reading theories and, you know, hypothesis and all these different stuff out there. But that theory is that we did transition into a different universe timeline, whatever it is. You know, we're still more or less within the constructs of our timeline, but little subtle differences. But one of those differences is that a large part of the population has been, quote unquote, turned on, right? Now, that doesn't mean like one person's better than the other, but maybe like the empathy that you've been ignoring for a long time is now very present. And I say that, and I do put a little bit of weight in not that whole theory, but just like the unaware awakenings, because I have clients that see me that have never meditated, never done yoga, never done a quote unquote religious, peaceful, spiritual practice, but have all of a sudden like come into empathy and have no idea what to do with it. They've gone through life being numb to all emotions, and now all of a sudden they feel everything around everybody. Mm. You know, so the reason I say that is like we kind of know what we're getting ourselves into with meditation, but we also have no idea, like with these peaceful practices. And being prepared to be startled, being prepared to be faced with something that might be disheartening. For my personal path in meditation, it was like eventually as I started finding my breath and finding, you know, peace with that, here comes this little mirror that started to slide down in front of my face that showed me how I really thought about myself. And it wasn't good at all. And it sent me into a spiral because I didn't really realize how toxic I was to myself mm-hmm. until I did. And it was like, well, shit, how do I come back from this? Right. You know, I know all the things I've done. You know, I know all the drugs I've done, the things I've sold, the abandonment of the father I was, all the shit that I've done that tallies up the shitty things that Adam is, that's blaring right in front of my face. And like, how do I get past that? You know? And so it's not always fucking roses and glitter when you step into a spiritual path, right? Sometimes it's harder than the thing that you're stepping away from. But, you know, is that something that you've kind of encountered with some of the folks that you've worked with? Is that like that shock of awakening of like, oh my God, like, I don't know if I was ready for this. I don't know if this is what I thought that this was going to be.
Yeah, it's like with the emotion when I start working with somebody over the long term is I tell them like, you know, as I have them breathe and emotion just comes up. It always does, especially if they've been trying to deal with life and have been distracted. And then I walk them through the process, how just be with the emotion and allow it to be. And what will happen, I'll tell them like, you're going to experience more emotion now. Mm-hmm. That's the way it works. Just with like meditation, when you tune in and notice the thoughts in the mind, there's more, it seems to get worse. Like this is getting worse. What's wrong? And it's really like, no, it's working. Like you're noticing everything that's there. And so it's not for the faint of heart, but once you have that awakening, once you're activated or whatever happens, there's really, you got to either face it or that, I feel like that's what's happening on the planet now is as the planet ascends, we're at a time of mastery or misery. Mm-hmm. Everyone here has the potential to be a master. And that's what's being asked of us with the emotions coming up, to integrate these emotions and to love. I consider the emotions like our children coming back and to just be with them and love them. And for me, I have people do that with their breath.
Yeah.
Just be that loving presence. Don't talk them to death. Don't, you know, tell them to wait outside. Don't tell them to go sit in the corner until I can deal with you. You know, it's like, just be with them, just be and allow. And then that's why, you know, it's great that people have you to guide them and show them like, okay, this is how I do it. Or this is what I'm being guided to share with you in this moment. And now go and do it, try it yourself. And then you check back in with them and they're kind of getting it, but they're like, well, what about this? And it's like, oh yeah, okay. try the, you know, it's, and a lot of times we're just guiding them to what they kind of know. And they're like, oh, you know, I thought of that, or I kind of felt that, yeah. but I wasn't sure. It's like, yeah, follow that, yeah. that inkling, follow that, you know, that wisp, the whisper on the wind kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Cause it's so subtle. It gets missed. Just yeah. like astrology. It's, you know, I was thinking about that today, just like how astrology is more accurate than any news I'm getting these days. Cause it's something we can all agree on. So we'll get into the Vedic and Western. It gets a little confusing because of the degrees, but it's like, oh, this planet's here right now. And therefore there's this, you know, interpretation of what it might mean, but that's what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. You know, like we had a new moon in Capricorn just the other day, and like, yep. that's what was the energy, and this is how we can work with it. And that was largely missing growing up in our Western culture, is like this Gregorian calendar. Today's Monday, you know, it's January 5th or whatever.
Right.
And that's the day. But whereas the Mayans and a lot of the other, like every indigenous culture had like ways to connect with the day, to connect with the environment, to connect with nature. And it made a richer human. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it just, it brought more depth and dimension rather than a cog in the wheel thing, which is what nobody wants anymore. I think the plague taught us that.
Yeah,
the right. 2020 thing.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute. You mean I can stay home uh-huh. and be with my kids, or I can go, you know, live somewhere else. And yeah. it really snapped us out of like, man, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Or what am I, what, you know, some people too really had a hard time. You know, I feel for people that were like stuck in an apartment or in an abusive relationship or something.
And,
but it also helped them really like realize like, oh wow, I got to get free of this.
Right. Yeah. So, how much numbing yeah. you were doing, how much separating you were doing, you know, mm-hmm. just like all this conditioning stuff. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's, I think that's the biggest blessing that I could see that came from this situation recently is like, yeah, it wasn't a continent. It wasn't a race. It wasn't a sect of people. It was the entire planet that was like, oh shit, like we're not happy. We're not doing this right. Now, yeah. whatever, you know, percentage can continue on with that thought process. Great. Whatever percentage had to go back to whatever life they had. Also great. You know, we're all figuring it out together. But I think that uneasiness that you spoke of just, was it, a lot of people were unable to sit with that after they figured it out. It's like, there's mm-hmm. no, I can't be here anymore in this space. So does that, you know, that in the meditation and, you know, just the way that we're presenting life now, does that kind of move in towards that new earth prophecy that you, you know, spoke of the last time we were on? And, you know, do you see us moving towards like, is this like part of that process of moving towards that new earth that we're working towards or developing?
Yeah, I feel like it's already here.
Okay.
Like 2012, there was a paradigm shift and there was a change, and it's similar to like the seasons is a great way to describe it. I've heard other people talk about it is like right now we're in winter. At some point we'll move into fall and there'll be like a period where there's like kind of like now we're in fall, but it may not seem like it. It's like, well, it still looks like winter. It's still cold, mm-hmm. but it gradually it'll grow and expand. And one day you're like, wow, it's, you know, it's nicer. You know, going into spring. I don't know if I said fall or what.
Oh, spring. Yep.
But you start moving, and things start melting. It starts getting warmer, and it's like, oh yeah, it's more evident now. So the people that were more sensitive and more like tuned in, as far as whatever, they felt it coming for a while. Mm-hmm. And some of us, like myself, were really stoked for it to happen, and then it didn't happen. It was like, why are these systems still in place that are really not serving very many people, if anybody, at this point? Mm-hmm. And now it's starting to present more and more like, oh, there might be some big shifts coming, especially this year. And basically, it's like the planets ascending, like we're moving into like spring and then into summer. And so as that happens, there's going to be this thawing and this awakening, this kind of like coming out and revealing of things. And then how we navigate it personally is going to determine how, whether we have the mastery or the misery kind of thing. And a lot of people I feel are going to choose to exit. They're going to choose to die, to go to a different timeline or a different seemingly planet. And I feel like in their reality, we're all going to die that are trying to ascend and, you know, do these practices or whatever that really helps us be with what we're witnessing and not making it good or bad or whatever, just be the love and still set boundaries. And then in our reality, it's going to look like they died. And it's not good or bad or anything. It's going to be sad for us as humans, but it's going to allow things to kind of transition and move. So there's not this, like, right now it's almost like there's two different worlds coexisting,
right,
even though there is a separation. It's almost like looking at a fish tank between the two and what people are choosing. And I really feel like it's simple, you know, this love, peace, and joy is what it is. And we still have a human experience, but if we're judging, that's the ego mind. Mm. We can discern and set boundaries, but if we've already set those boundaries and then we're judging and giving power to these thoughts about these people that we think are hurting us or hurting others, we're actually reinforcing it.
Right.
So the practice is to come back to love and be that for ourselves. And then I feel like that's the best way to change the external, is you become like this radiant energy of like love, and it shines out and it allows others to wake up and snap out of what they're doing. And it gives them opportunity to go and ascend to a different reality, which is what I believe is happening right now. Is there's still people that could shift and come to like the new earth, where it's going to be more peace and harmony, more basically I see people being free to do what they love and get paid for it, and not have to be in so much survival and competition, where competition is going to be more helping us, you know, it's going to be more collaboration versus competition. And, to be like children again in the world and enjoy and feel safe. And even I think we're going to start seeing the children start to be liberated too, the ones that are being used, you know, their energy and everything else, and the people being exposed that have been doing that, because that can't coexist with what the new earth is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and there's such a special energy with the youth, you know, and I can't say I didn't experience it as a youth, because I just was being a youth. I didn't really know what to look for or not. But being, you know, my 40s now and seeing, you know, versions of youth, I'd say, I'd say 25 and younger, it's so inspiring to see these young adults and young children that just don't want to be a part of this, that don't want to be, you know, a cog in a wheel, like you said earlier. They don't want to, you know, they want to have their own thoughts. They don't want to be just lumped into a group of people. And I'm reading a book right now. I'm about halfway through. It's called The End of Averages. And they talk about how, like, in the United States, at least in 1870, we started to lump humanity as an average. You know, average man looks like this, average woman looks like this, average household, average income, all this shit, right?
Yeah.
And at the beginning, we wanted to be the average, right? We wanted to try our hardest to be the average person, right? Because that's what the best was, because everybody, you know, that's the masses. But what we found is that nobody was average. Like, if you took 1,000 men and put them all together and then say, like, I'm one of the 1,000 men that was, you know, grafted into this average, if you took my parameters and based it against that average parameters, I wouldn't match up at all. Maybe one qualifier, maybe two qualifiers out of like 10. That doesn't make me an average person. So nobody really fits those averages. But we've been conditioning ourselves to be the average. And then we got to the 20s and 30s and it was like, okay, now we want to be a better or below average. We want to delineate, you know, are you better than average? Cool, you get this kind of job. If you're below average, sorry, you're a factory worker. You know, and we're finally, I think, to the age now where we can stop looking at the masses as an average. We can really get back to the individual, right? Now, not the individual as an ego. It's like, hey, I'm going to just be over here doing my own thing, right? We understand the importance of the individual being a part of the system, but the individual can be an individual. I don't have to look, sound, or act like you do because of whatever society that we're in. I'm able to have tattoos, long hair, you know, my own type of job, my own type of work, my own type of relationships, right? We don't have to be polygamous anymore, or we don't have to be monogamous anymore. Now we can be polygamous. We can have all these different types of, you know, opportunities for genders or sexualities, or, you know, the boxes are being blown up, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's such a beauty in that, but it's also kind of scary for a lot of us, a lot of folks, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of move into that new earth idea to where we can fully explore and embrace that human experience without judgment.
Well, that's how people are going to thrive, is by being themselves.
Yeah.
And it's just scary to do that because it goes against maybe our own programming, what society thinks. And but that's it. That's what's going to be the determining factor, I think, is can we just be ourselves? Mm-hmm. And first, it's like, how do you know thyself? How do you know who you even are.
Right.
Like I spent so much time trying to be something and accommodate and please people that I didn't know who I was. And it took a long time and I'm still trying to figure that out. Like I never thought I'd be calling myself a galactic shaman. Right. I met a man that went by that title and he was that for sure like 10, 15 years ago. And he set me on this path and he's like, you can do this too. I'm like, I'm not going to do this. This is weird, you know? but it kept showing up, you know, and the unit, you know, the universe is always conspiring with us. You know, there's really no punishment. There's like consequences or like things that happen based on what we're putting out or whatever, how we're responding. But there's a benevolent universe that's there for us. And it's just allowing ourselves to be with what's happening and to notice what's knocking on our door, what's all around us.
Yeah.
And that's, again, presence. Like can a lot of magic has happened when I was like really upset about something and I just let it go and I just allowed myself to feel the upset and then I go out in the world anyway and I work on just being happy, being that, you know, smiling or at least making the best of it. And then something amazing would come as a result that I would have missed and I missed most of my life because I was stuck in this rut of there's something wrong with me or I don't have this, therefore my life sucks or they're better than me. Cause you know, it was like what you struggled with meditation is what I struggled with life. A lot of times I just about get what I want. And then it was ripped away from me. It's like, what the hell? Why? What am I doing wrong? You know?
Yeah.
And the universe is like, nothing, it's fine. But you know, it's like, they were trying to get me to be more present, I think. And
yeah.
And to own my weirdo that I am versus right. Trying to play a role. And I think that's why, you know, it won't be as much, won't be about competition anymore because people will be doing all the same. There's a ton of sound healers out there, but nobody does them like you. Nobody's ever going to do it the way you do it.
Right.
And that's because you're going to do it your own way because you know who you are more and more and you bring that out and you play with what your passion is as a result of doing it. And you know, people can go to like a million sound healings and they go to yours. Like I've never been to a sound healing like this. This is amazing. You know?
Yeah.
And so it's beautiful and it's fun. It actually supports us rather than, you know, limiting us kind of thing.
Totally. And I mean, that individualism and that support that you talk about when we're trying to find ourselves, like immediately, like I just flashed to like me being a 7-year-old boy getting ready for the first day of school and putting on what I thought was cool, right? You know, knee-high socks with the stripes. And this is like probably what, 89? Knee-high stripes, socks with the stripes, like kind of shorty shorts, right? It's before the 90s when we got baggy, so little shorty shorts. And like, I thought I looked good, and I got to school, and people made fun of me because, you know, of what I was wearing or whatever it was. We didn't grow up rich, you know, we grew up pretty poor, and mom made a lot of clothes. But I felt good until I got into the humanity, and then humanity's like, oh, look at this fucking guy. This short shorts and his tall socks. Yeah, get out of here with that kid. You know, so it's like, you know, those, and that's that. Those pings of remembrance that I have when I tried to be individual, right? And when I step towards that individuality now, like that ping of that non-acceptance is still there, right? But I think, you know, what that's driven in me now is to help encourage any human being that puts themselves out into the world as like, this is how you're presenting today. You look fantastic. Love you. Right. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being a part of humanity.
Yeah.
Right. Now from a child to an adult, anywhere in between, like it's, you know, having that encouragement so you can find your individualism. So you can feel confident about maybe trying something that doesn't fit. Right. But then finding the thing that does fit because you feel the encouragement to continue to try.
It's great feedback too when people are kind of, you know, giving you a hard time.
Yeah.
Because that means you're doing it.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, what's weird is I've experienced that with people too. I was like, this guy's a weirdo. This, I don't know, what is up with this person?
Yeah.
And then you kind of get used to it. And then pretty soon it's endearing. And pretty soon that's like you're one of your favorite people that at first you were like making fun of them and thought they were crazy, didn't want to be around them. But, you know, their heart, it's about their heart. Right. You know, they're in that place where it's about their genuine expression versus I'm trying to be this so that I can. Whatever.
Yeah.
But you feel it, it's just authentic and people are drawn to that. But at first they're going to be, kind of like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like, and if we keep going, and if you just keep going, you know, and then they start to embrace it too. And that's that light, you know, and I think that's, again, to get back to the meditation and everything else is like, there's no set way this looks, you know, we've been shown in the past that it's, oh, a guru, or it's these certain kind of people that are really good meditators, and this is what meditation is. This is the persona. But no, it's a tool. It's a ability that we can cultivate. Everybody can cultivate this, and it liberates us to who we really are.
Yeah.
And it becomes just the practice out in the world too. And so, yeah, it's like shedding these notions of who we think we are and tuning into what's really going on inside and having the courage to first connect with it, feel it, and then start shining it out in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. We need more of that. I mean, that's because everybody's light is unique, right? Mm-hmm. You said this earlier, you know, it's special, right? We tend to think we're special, right? And I love the idea that everybody's unique, but nobody's special, right?
Yeah.
We're all unique in the way that we represent ourselves, but that doesn't make you special, right? And I think that's such a beautiful message. It's like, be unique, be the most unique person you can be, right? Be the you that you know how, but don't let it go to your head.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just choosing love.
Yeah, totally.
You can always tell the ego mind, because it's like judgment, a projection into the future or the past, trying to figure something out. And that's always our indication, you know, and then the emotion is the feedback.
Mm.
If there's any kind of like undesirable emotion, it usually means we're thinking about something, we're judging something, we're analyzing it, a situation, like maybe a breakup or something, and it hurts and it's sad. And like there's an even more amazing person coming. But because we're like judging it and holding on to it, we're going to get that feedback. And so that's always our feedback, is the emotion. And it's like, oh yeah, feel the emotion.
Yeah.
There's going to be some grief. That's like universal, you know, and everybody feels that, at least for a period of time.
Yeah.
But a lot of this stuff is just our judging what's happening.
Yeah. Well, you talked about briefly about a meditation course that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So wrapping up, we'll talk about the meditation course. You know, is that something people can do online? They have to see you in person, or you know, what does that kind of entail?
Yeah, it's online. It was a live course I did. It was 4 weeks. And so I had the recordings up and everything. Mm-hmm. And it walks you step by step how to approach meditation from a place of surrender and a deep inner knowing of the truth of who we are. And some like tools and techniques and little tricks and things I've learned over the years that I find are helpful. And everyone that did the course really had a lot of positive feedback for it. So
beautiful.
I'm excited it's out there, because I find a lot of people like, well, you teach me how to meditate. And it's not really anything you can just tell someone. You can give them some pointers, but then they got to kind of explore it themselves.
Right.
And so this course lets them kind of tune in and go in gradually and see what works. And then based on the videos we had of the live calls, you get more insights from others that struggle with similar beliefs. It's kind of almost the same thing people always say. It's really interesting. Like these core programs that are in place of why we can't meditate, or, you know, what an intention is. And an intention can just be one word versus this long, drawn out, detailed thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's thank you for doing that, you know, because it's like, I mean, this whole conversation has been about demystifying things, and like we create so many stories in our head that we just limit our ability to just take that first step.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just so important to, because like you said, like meditation and all these practices are going to resonate differently with the person because of what you've experienced and the way you approach it. And so, you know, having somebody that can give you like, you know, a comfort level of approaching a modality, but knowing that your experience is going to be very unique to you, and just give it a shot. Right? It's like, there's so, like with me, you know, the impetus for me to finally start meditating was like, you can wait another hour for your wine, right? Give yourself this, you know, 30 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever it is, to sit and just listen, and then have your wine later, right? You can still have that. At that point, I wasn't ready to give it up, but it's like, Not that necessarily I had to earn it, but it's like, do something positive for yourself before you do something that's going to be what maybe like considered at the time negative for myself, right?
Yeah. And,
you know, it's just, it doesn't take a lot to dip a toe in and to really change your life. You know, it's just a little bit of dedication, a little bit of courage, you know, to get out there and do something different.
Yeah, totally. Do it for yourself. And
yeah.
Yeah. Make it fun.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Well, Jason, thank you so much for being here. I'll leave links to the show notes, to ways to get in touch with Jason through his website and the meditation stuff that he's got going on. But thank you so much for all that you do, brother. And look forward to having you back.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it was great being here. And thank you so much.
Thank you,
man. I love that you're out there helping people.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah, yeah. We'll chat soon.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for spending time with Jason and I. Please check out the show notes for ways to get in touch with Jason, to learn about his meditation course that he does, or to book a session with him. Obeisance and love. We'll see you next time.